Welcome to Bearing Light, a podcast of the Georgia Bulletin, news source of the Catholic Archdiocese of Atlanta. I'm Nicole Golden, editor, along with co-host Andrew Nelson, reporter. Advent, the season of hope, expectation, and waiting, is upon us. The beginning of the church's liturgical year, Advent, began Sunday, November 30th. So joining us today on Bearing Light is Michael Accurso, Director of Music and Liturgy at Atlanta's Cathedral of Christ the King, here to discuss songs of the season. Thank you and welcome.
It's great to be with you. Yeah, thanks for having me.
So excited to talk about music.
Yeah, it is not only the most wonderful time of the year, we get to hear songs that especially resonate in people's hearts and minds, and things that they sort of have a strong emotional or connection to.
So it's great time for music this year. Beautiful time of the year for music.
Tell us a little bit about your background in music, how you first discovered music, and your educational background, and then share with us how you made your way to Atlanta's Cathedral.
Sure. So I grew up in a musical family. My father was a professional musician. He studied composition in school, and then but on the side he was a jazz musician. And so ultimately he had a career in music. He was a college professor, but so between his education and his work experience, he taught classical and jazz. And so I was exposed to that at a young age. And my mother was actually also a music major, and that's how they met. But she never worked in music. She wound up working in finance. So, that was...
You would have been a disappointment if you didn't study music.
So music is in the family. I took piano lessons as a kid, and like most kids, I hated them. And so I quit.
Me too.
I quit. And I never did any choirs as a kid. But then in middle school, I had a few friends that had been in the choral program at my home church. I grew up in New Jersey at a very large parish, over 5,000 registered families. And yet we had a church that sat less than 400 people. So we used the church and we used a gym. And so we had a lot of masses for every weekend. And so we had a lot of ensembles. And so when I was in middle school, the music director was starting a new ensemble just for boys. And I don't know that she meant it to just be boys, but the initial interest was just boys. And so I had these friends doing it, and so I did it with them. And it turns out to be great because, you know, at that age, you know, you're going through changed voices as a boy, and you don't want to do that in front of girls.
So it was positive. Positive peer pressure there.
Right. And so that's how I got involved in going back. First of all, that's how I got back into music, but then that was my first entry into church music. And then when I was in high school, I got really sick, and I never really knew exactly what it was. Looking back, it was probably some sort of bronchitis, but I couldn't sing for months. And so that's when I wanted to get back into playing the piano. And so I went to my father, actually, and actually drew on his jazz experience, and he taught me how to improvise. And so I came back into playing through improvisation, and then filled in with sort of some of the more classical features and approach technique. So that was sort of my reintro into music. At this point, I'm in high school, and I have to decide now what I'm going to do in college, and I wanted to be an architect.
Yeah.
And so the first schools I went to go see were engineering schools, and I had a bad relationship with calculus. And so I decided I didn't want to do math. You know, in hindsight, that was probably, you know, not necessarily the most logical, you know, it's probably more algebra. But anyway, I decided to go into school for music. And I started looking at schools. I wanted to study sacred music because I had a great experience in church. But I also wanted to study music education because I thought that there was a chance I wouldn't actually be a good enough musician to be a church musician. So I thought I can teach. And I don't mean to any disrespect to any teachers that are listening, because, you know, teachers are excellent performers. I wanted to go to school where I could study both. And I landed on Moravian College. So I started my music studies there. I was a voice major, but I always played the piano and organ on the side. And then from there, I went to graduate school at Notre Dame.
Go Irish.
Go Irish. And I was in Notre Dame for quite some time. I eventually got a master's and then a doctorate in conducting. And so then I had to decide then, what am I going to do now? Am I going to teach? And I still, you know, I wanted to do church music. And so before actually I was even finished with exams and dissertation, I started to apply for jobs just out of practice. And I only applied for cathedral positions because I thought, you know, I just thought, let me shoot for the top and see what happens. And I didn't actually expect to get one. But I did wind up becoming the director of music for the Diocese of Raleigh and then and their cathedral, which at the time was Sacred Heart Cathedral, had the interesting designation of being the smallest cathedral in the contiguous U.S. If, you know, we in Atlanta, we know about Christ the King. Sacred Heart is half the size of Christ the King.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But while I was there, we built a new cathedral. And so a 2,000-seat cathedral, Holy Name of Jesus. And so I was in Raleigh for 3 years, and then from there I came to Atlanta.
So you came from our province neighbors.
Exactly.
I did
from
not.
Bishop Zarama.
Oh, okay.
Yes, of good memory.
A good friend of ours. Right, right. Oh. So tell us about Director of Music and Liturgy. What is that role, really, at the cathedral?
Right. So, well, music and liturgy, they're a married pair. Mm-hmm. you know, they work together, and music is my main area of passion and expertise. And so I oversee all of the musical aspects of the cathedral in some ways more directly than others. So, you know, the morning masses I really have fairly direct oversight of, whether that be with cantors and organ or the choir. We've just started another choir, and we have several children's choirs. We have a very big children's choir program, which I'm proud of, and I have a slight bias there too because they're directed by my wife. but we have about 75 kids involved, so that's a great part of the cathedral.
Fantastic.
And then in the afternoon, we have some other ensembles that provide music in a more contemporary style. So, you know, they fall within my department, but I pretty much give them the free rein to, you know, choose their own music. And as long as it's within, you know, the liturgical appropriate confines, you know, I pretty much let them have free rein. So that's the music side of my job. And then on the liturgical side of my job, I would say, you know, a lot of it is overseeing volunteers, Eucharistic ministry, altar service, readers, you know, and that just takes a lot of coordination. And I have great help in that as well.
So that it's all a seamless mass, right?
Right. Right.
Ideally.
Team of sacristans. So that's all just falls within my department.
I've mostly gone to the cathedral for high church, what I call high church events, you know, ordinations,
right.
Maybe things where the archbishop may preside. But the music there is beautiful, first of all, but it's always very like high church. Does the cathedral also have, I don't know if contemporary is the right word, but congregational singing for styles or masses?
Right.
Is that the right question, congregational?
I think I know what you're asking. And I'm going to answer it in two parts. Just one to say that even within the quote-unquote high church style, you know, I do strive to have music that's available for the congregation to participate in. But we do blend in, you know, choral music from the choral repertoire that is not congregational, you know, and other aspects like that. But just to go back to, say, those other ensembles that I was mentioning. So on Sunday afternoon at the 4 o'clock Mass, we have a Life Teen Band.
Oh.
And then at the 5:30 Mass, we have what's called the Cathedral Ensemble. And they also do music of mostly the contemporary age, but they do a wide gamut. Actually, their director works here in the Chancery. It's Ellen Masick. She works in the Tribunal.
Oh
right. Okay.
I didn't know that. Oh, yeah. That's great. So we have a variety of music genres, I guess. Right. Is that the right term? Right.
Exactly.
So if you are drawn to choral music, very polyphony, right. Is that what they call it?
Polyphony.
Yeah. Then that's one at one mass. But if you like guitars and contemporary music, there's another mass for you. Right. Oh, that's great.
So something for everyone.
Exactly.
It must be fun to have to dip in and out of each different styles.
Yeah. I would say pretty much the three groups that I've mentioned, we sort of stick to our own because, you know, that's where our strengths lie. But we do all do multiple, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and so we have you here today to talk a lot about Advent and Christmas. They're distinct seasons. Of course, we tend to lump them all together, maybe.
Right.
But what are some differences? And then maybe share a piece of music that's your favorite from each.
Sure. So the music of Advent and the music of Christmas. So the music of Advent really focuses on, we're just going to say, the coming of Christ. And the music of Advent is actually very deep, and there's a lot of double meaning to so much of it, because it's not only the coming of the baby, Jesus, but a lot of it also has references to second coming. It's just very, it sounds a little, it's not enough to say that it's clever, you know, but it is. I mean, I think I'm just going to come back to that word one more time. It's very deep. Mm-hmm. So listen for that as you're listening. Favorites from Advent, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel it's classic, but there's just so much to it. That's one that it's so old. Like it's timeless. It's the text dates back to the 9th century and
still means a lot.
Right. It's still, here we are over 1,000 years later and we're still singing it and it means so much. And that's the one that everybody grabs, you know?
Right.
Another one that I love though for Advent, that's much less known. It's called Lo, He Comes with Clouds Descending.
Oh, wow.
You know, our whole hymn tradition, not only for Advent and Christmas, but our entire hymn tradition is our hymn tradition in the English speaking world, England, United States, it's actually much broader than other hymn traditions because England was so influenced by the French and the Germans that all of that musical tradition influenced England, and then England, you know, they came here. And so this Lo, He Comes with Clouds Descending, it actually comes from the English Methodist tradition.
Yeah.
But it's a great tune, and again, it focuses on that second coming. We just heard that scripture only a week or two ago.
If the average person in the pews wanted to really sit down and look at the lyrics, that would be in most hymnals under Advent or...
Yes.
Okay.
It would be in most hymnals under Advent, yeah.
Because you're right, I have not heard of that one as much as O Come, O Come, Emmanuel.
Right.
Okay.
And then as far as Christmas goes, so the music of Christmas, I think Christmas, you know, our culture has made it a much more sentimental season. But it also has a very deep theology to it. And I think the music of Christmas really tells that story. The music of Christmas is very historical. It's giving you the historical account. But my favorite, this one is much easier to answer, is O Come All Ye Faithful.
Yeah.
And one, it's got a great tune, right? it's a strong tune. You know,
should ask you to sing it a little bit here.
Almost every church I know of uses it. You know, almost all churches use it specifically for the procession, but not every church does. Yeah. But the text is actually, I think, one of the greatest parts of it, because it draws on our complete biblical and theological understanding of Christmas. And I say that because if you look at the gospel accounts on Christmas, you'll find that we get bits and pieces from each one. So, you know, on Christmas, midnight mass, we hear from the Gospel of Luke and we hear about the shepherds, right? And the angels. But we don't hear about the Magi because they're not in the Gospel of Luke. Mm. They're in the Gospel of Matthew. And so, you know, and there's more verses to O Come All Ye Faithful than what actually we see in the hymnal. There's actually 6 or 7 verses, but most hymnals only have 4. And so if you look at the total hymn, you get the angels and the shepherds and you get the Magi. And then you get God of God, Light of Light. There's that verse that's not in every hymnal either. And then you get Word of the Father. And these come from the Gospel of John. And because there's no manger in John, there's no, you know, it says in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God. And so it combines all of that. And then we also got the Nicene Creed in there too. And I just think that it's just such a great hymn because it makes it so approachable. You don't even realize that you're getting all of this theology in one hymn.
The whole story.
Do we know the author of the hymn or when it was composed?
It was composed in the 18th century, I believe. The composer was John Francis Wade. He was an English Catholic who lived in France because it was at the time very illegal to be a Catholic in England.
Oh, wow.
So he went to France. And there's this great historical story that I read once, and I've never been able to find it again, so I don't know that there's much credence to it. But it's a great story that he wrote it in English, and then because he was in France, he actually translated it into Latin, into Adeste Fideles.
Right.
And then it was retranslated back into English. Again, I've never found that scholarship anywhere, except for the very first time I read it in college.
Sounds good.
It's a great story, right?
Yeah. It's lore, at least.
Yeah. It's lore. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. That's a little bit of the story.
That's great.
Well, now when we sing it this Christmas, Andrew, we'll look at it differently.
It's a full package of all 4 Gospels.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I never had really paid attention, but thank you.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really good.
And I know you, like other parishes, many parishes will do this, have lessons and carols. I think that Mary Our Queen and St. Michael the Archangel are just 2 that I know of offhand that are having lessons and carols, but the cathedral will as well.
Yes.
So what is the history of a lessons and carols program?
So the history there, it's from the 19th century, so late 1800s. It's a service. It was developed in England, but it draws upon the Catholic liturgy of nocturnes. So it's liturgy of the office, if you look at the structure of lessons and carols, it actually looks a little bit like the first part of the Easter Vigil. So you have a reading, and then in the Easter Vigil you would have a psalm followed by a prayer. Now, in lessons and carols, you have a reading followed by a musical response. It doesn't have to be a psalm, followed by a prayer. And there are 9 of them, just in the most traditional form. You can do less. But that's another look to the Easter Vigil. In the Easter Vigil, if you were to do all of the readings, including the New Testament and the Gospel, you would have 9 readings. And so it's making that kind of comparison or similarity, and it traces, the readings trace the history of salvation. And so you always start with a reading from Genesis, with the fall, with the apple. And then from that point, you can do it a couple of different ways. You can do an Advent lessons and carols where you stay within that parameter, where you don't actually read the gospel of the birth of Jesus. You could do a Christmas lessons and carols, or in the tradition of the cathedral and other places, I didn't make this up, you could start in Advent and you could end with Christmas. And so we do about 3 to 4 readings from the Advent collection. We read from Genesis, Isaiah, Zephaniah, and we hear the prophets speaking about, you know, what will come to be, and we hear about, you know, the root of Jesse. And then we will read from the gospel accounts, Luke, Matthew, and end with the John that I was just referring to a few minutes ago.
Right.
And so we have those nine readings. At the cathedral, the archbishop presides, and we invite all of the auxiliary bishops and the clergy of the cathedral. So they all participate in the readings of the readings of the lessons. They're called lessons in that particular context. And then, you know, just true to that form, we have a musical response to each one. So some of those are choral, where just the choir does it, and then some are the carols of the season. So we'll sing O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, and Lo, He Comes with Clouds Ascending, Silent Night, and O Come, All Ye Faithful.
Oh. Wow, sounds incredible.
Yeah, it does. Certainly does. It must be a crowd pleaser.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it must have a very strong attendance because families just right. want to experience that.
Right.
And the nuts and bolts, Sunday, December the 14th, I believe.
December 14th at 7 p.m.
Okay. And also the cathedral's website is great. If people forget, they can go there. And,
right. Cathedralctk.com.
Thank you. I was looking to find that on my notes, and you beat me to it. I wanted also, someone mentioned they knew that we were going to talk about Advent and said the O Antiphons,
right.
that they were a big fan of those. What, those play a role in the latter part of Advent and...
Right. So traditionally, the O Antiphons are sung at Vespers in the 7 days that lead up to Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And so those are the basis for the seven verses of O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. And so to do those in their most appropriate liturgical home. Those would be the antiphons that get sung right before the Magnificat at Vespers in those 7 days leading up to the 24th. It's interesting. I was just talking to somebody about the O Antiphons, and we always sing O Come, Emmanuel with the first verse being O Come, Emmanuel. But actually, traditionally, In the way it is set up in Vespers, you don't get O Come, O Come, Emmanuel until the day before Christmas Eve. So it's really the last verse. And if you take the Latin title of all of these O antiphons, and they're called O antiphons because the first word is always O. It's just a very practical reason for calling them O antiphons. So it's O Emmanuel and O Rex Gentium, which is king of the nations. O Oriens, O Clavis David, O Radix Jesse, O Adonai, O Sapientia. So now, if you go to the word after the O, and you take the first letter, and you start at the feast, at Christmas, and you work backwards, you get Emmanuel Rex Oriens, so E-R-O, and then you get Clavis Radix Adonai Sapientiae, C-R-A-S. This is a Latin acrostic.
Oh, wow.
Right. And so you put all those letters together and you get two words. You get ero cross, which is Latin for I will be there tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
Oh, how fantastic.
Right. Isn't that just like a great little, you know,
advance prophecy of what
right?
is
it was
what
very,
is to be.
Very thoughtfully arranged.
Everything has such deep meaning.
Right.
And
yeah.
We just sing it and maybe don't pay attention.
Right. So we don't sing them in their correct order. And I think, you know, that's editorial decisions made by hymn publishers.
Yeah. So.
Right. Another beautiful thing that about the cathedral is the sanctuary space. And how does that lend to the musical experience there, the acoustics? And
yeah, the acoustics of the cathedral are quite nice. As you know, and as I alluded to earlier, our cathedral is not amongst the largest cathedrals. But it's of a size and shape and building material. It's made out of limestone that, you know, it gives a very nice acoustic without being overly echoey and boomy. And so that certainly helps with music making to sing in a nice space that, you know, when you sing, it actually, the sound goes somewhere.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing.
Are there resources for some of the things we've talked about? If people just want to look up text or hear a song that you've talked about, is there a good place to go to, an app or a website?
I actually love to listen to music on YouTube.
Mm.
There's so much great, there's so many great recordings on YouTube. Some are professional and some are not. And but, you know, you just have to know what you're looking for. And YouTube has a service much like Spotify, or, you know, you can stream through it. But any of them really are great places. And what I love to do is just look up one of these, one or two that you know you like, and then let the algorithms show you things that you don't know. Mm. I can't tell you how many pieces of music I have planned that I did not know previously.
Wow.
But I just heard. I don't think it's unusual for somebody to have a hymnal in their own book collection, to look at texts themselves. There's all kinds of books out there, hymnal companions they're called. They'll tell you the stories of the hymns. And so there's several of them out there.
We have several traditions surrounding Advent that we, families are encouraged to do, maybe making an Advent wreath, you know, right. At home around the right. table or something like that. Is there an Advent tradition surrounding music that a parishioner or somebody could maybe think about doing or that you've heard of?
Well, in my own home, and I, as I said earlier, my wife is also a musician. We do sing a yep. verse of an Advent hymn as we do our table blessing in the evening. We in Advent, instead of say the traditional table blessing, we'll light an Advent candle and sing.
That's great. So instead yeah. of saying grace before meals, let's say,
right?
But many people do. You might sing a verse from an Advent song.
Right.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And we have young kids, and so, you know, if we do something like O Come Emmanuel, at least they can all sing on the rejoice part, you know?
That's wonderful.
Yeah. A loud resounding for the rejoice part.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. That's wonderful.
We could all adopt something like that, I think, as a new tradition for Advent.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael, so much for helping us to understand more about music and its role in these beautiful seasons. And again, December 14th, 7 to 8 p.m. is the Cathedral's Lessons and Carols. More at cathedralctk.com. Thank you to our listeners of Bearing Light. Find episodes on the Georgia Bulletin website, YouTube, and your favorite podcast platforms the first and third Mondays of each month. The print edition of the Georgia Bulletin is published bi-weekly, featuring news in English and Spanish. Learn more at georgiabulletin.org. A blessed Advent to all, and join us again on Bearing Light.